welcome to the Perfect Sip Podcast, a podcast about the art of home cocktail crafting. It's happy hour, and here to join me today is my brother and co-host, Matthew Henry. How you doing, Matthew?
If I had a tail, I'd be wagging it.
If you had a tail, you'd be wagging it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's one of the sad things that we don't have a tail.
Right. Well, if I had a tail, I think it would be stuck between my legs.
Yeah, cowering in the corner.
Yeah, my ears would be down, my whole body would be shaking, and I would be like, you're not sticking me in that car. You're not sticking me. I'm not getting in that car.
Only bad things happen when you get in the car, Ben.
That's right. People stick things where... Well, anyway, Matthew, what are we talking about today?
Not dogs.
Not dogs. Well, this week, Matthew, on the Tuesday show, which I know you listen to religiously because you text me about it all the time.
All the time.
I mean, you're like, hey, you should have said this. That was wrong. What I talked about was mixing equipment that people need to get when they are just getting started in the hobby. And by mixing equipment, we were specifically talking about measuring tools and shakers and mixing glasses. So we're gonna talk about those topics a little bit.
Yeah, okay.
But then we are each going to present a cocktail recipe for the day. And I think I promised that these were going to be original cocktail recipes, and they kind of are. Yours is definitely, you're bringing an original today.
Yes, I am.
But I am bringing it's not an original. It is a variation of the cocktail that I presented on Tuesday, the Whiskey Sour. And I can't call it an original because lots of people have made it this way. But first, let's get back to the equipment. So the first thing that I talked about, Matthew, was measuring tools. And I spent a lot of time talking about jiggers because I think the word is funny and I like to say the word.
Let's just say it together.
Jiggers.
Jiggers.
Jiggers. It's like, does Jell-O jigger? No. But you can make... No, I guess you can't really make Jell-O shots with a jigger. Isn't that interesting?
You couldn't?
What is the one shot you can't make with a jigger? A Jell-O shot.
Why couldn't you?
I mean, well, you could set them, I guess. You could set them in the jiggers. That sounds like a lot of work, man. That's too many jiggers.
It does. I need a lot of jiggers.
Like, once you have two jiggers, they just don't play well together in your drawer. Because they just...
Oh, no, they roll around. They usually find their way to the back of the drawer, and then you got to, like, go fish them out.
Yeah, and things get stuck on them. So do you use a jigger? I mean, I admit, they are very convenient to use, and you can, like, pour four different things and measure four different things, of different sizes even, with a single jigger. But do you use them?
I don't in my home cocktail making. It's just easier to use one of those OXO measuring cup things. It's a metal one. It's a very nice one. I use that. Because it's just simpler. But I have done a little bit of bartending, usually at charity events like poker tournaments for high school sports and golf tournaments, things like that. And when you need speed, the jigger is the way to go. So I definitely have used them when speed is an issue. But when I'm just at home, no, they're sitting in my little container that I take when I go bartend somewhere else. But at home, I have my little measuring cup.
I did hear you say that you like the OXO cups because that's what I use.
Yeah.
Now, you use the fancy metal ones that I talked about on the show.
Yes.
Right. Because the plastic ones are...
It's just, you know, honestly, it was because that's what I bought the first time and I went with it. I do actually also have a small glass one that measures up to like 4 ounces, but it's not an OXO. It just has the measuring things on the outside. And when I want to do like a double, like when I'm making two cocktails at once, I'll break that one out because I know that I'm going to need the volume. So, you know, I have those two things I kind of interchange back and forth.
Well, I counted today. I have 8 of the plastic ones.
8?
8, yeah.
So, you know, when 7 of them are in the dishwasher, you still have an 8.
That's right. Now, I think what's supposed to happen is that a certain number of them are supposed to stay in the kitchen, and then a certain number of them are supposed to stay in my bar area, but I've lost all track of that. I will say that once you have that many, that the stacking thing kind of wears off because they stack so high that you kind of have to do 2 stacks.
Yeah.
Today, as I was making my cocktail, I needed a place to put a garnish while I was preparing the rest of my cocktail, and I just pulled out one of my extra OXO measuring cups and plopped it down, and that held onto my garnish so it wasn't getting my work area dirty. Normally, I would put something like that on my cutting board, which is in my work area, but I was working in that area.
Yeah, I will say the one thing that you do need to make sure, and I think you mentioned this on the episode, is you got to make sure that it has a 1/4 ounce, a measurement part in there. So whatever you're choosing, has to have a quarter ounce part, because there are times when that quarter ounce is important.
Right. And there's a lot of cheap jiggers out there that do not have that. They just have the two measurements, right, because of the two sides. So make sure they have the graduations on the inside. Correct.
Ooh, big word. Big word. Good job.
Yeah. Big word. This is a sophisticated show, Matthew.
You keep telling me that.
Anyway. Okay. So we also talked about shakers, Matthew. And I went into great detail about the Boston shaker, the cobbler shaker, and the Parisian shaker. And you and I are both Boston shaker users.
We are, yes.
But you and I had an interesting conversation off the show about cobbler shakers. Like, have you used a cobbler shaker?
Yes. And when I first started my cocktail journey, I went straight with the Boston shaker. So I had never used another type of shaker. But I was actually at someone else's home recently, and that's all they had was a cobbler shaker. And I was like, oh, that's fine. That should work fine. And so I'm making the cocktails. As soon as it came to pour, like, liquid started coming out of places that I knew it shouldn't have. Like, it was like leaking everywhere, and it was getting everywhere, and it wasn't a fine pour through the top. It was a mess. And so I'm like, if that's what cobbler shakers are all about, they might look pretty, folks, but they don't act or work in the way that they should when it really comes down to it. So I'm happy that I've only been a Boston shaker guy.
Right. Well, it sounds like you had a poorly made one, first of all.
It's probably it.
But the reason it did that is because it couldn't go out the actual strainer.
Ice holding it back, I think, yeah.
So it was up on the seams, and then it was coming out through the seams, which, again, it shouldn't do if it's a well-made one. But that just, yeah, that's my point about cobbler shakers, is that they just don't pour very well. And then after you've used them, cleaning them is a pain. Just not great, you know. And then we also talked about Parisian shakers. Honestly, I said Parisian shakers were for snooty people, and I was trying to be funny, but I didn't mean to insult anybody who likes a Parisian shaker.
Parisian shakers might be for classy people.
Oh, right.
Maybe look at it that way, because, you know, they like the way things look on their bar, mm-hmm, and it is kind of classy looking, I must say.
Okay, well, in that case, the Parisian shaker is the preferred shaker of the Perfect Sip podcast, because we are classy, not snooty.
We're not snooty, but we ain't classy, dude.
Oh. Get off my lawn, sir.
Good day, sir.
Good day. Good day. So you agree, Boston shaker is the way to go. Have you ever had a Boston shaker accident, though?
Yes, I have. But not in the way that you think. Like, in the shaking part, no, because I am actually really nervous about that. So I have one hand on one shaker and the other hand on the other, and I do the shake back and forth where they're together. But getting the seal to release, I have had an accident where I banged it, and then I banged it so hard that it flew out of my other hand and the whole shaker went everywhere, and then I didn't have a cocktail anymore. It was on the floor. So yeah, that has happened once or twice to me in that respect.
I have a solution to that. And folks, I'm going to do something really mean, because I am not going to tell you what the solution to that is, because that is actually going to come in the next 2 weeks. Not on the coming Tuesday, but the show after that. We are going to be talking about cocktail making techniques, including how to shake a cocktail. I have made a bonus episode all about how to use the Boston shaker. It's like 10 minutes or so long, just about how to use the Boston shaker in a couple of weeks, including instructions on how to handle it when the seal becomes so tight that it won't pop off. All right, last question, Matthew, before we get into our cocktails.
Okay.
Do you have a mixing glass?
I do. I have a mixing glass, and I love it. It's so...
Yeah, because you're classy.
I am classy, and it's pretty. It's crystal, and it sits on my bar, and it looks so elegant. It's probably the nicest bar equipment that I have is my mixing glass. And when I'm mixing a drink for someone, It definitely looks a little classy that I've got this crystal glass that I'm mixing their drink in. I actually really, really like my mixing glass.
I see. So when you have a special someone over and you are standing there at the peninsula on your kitchenette and you are stirring the cocktail, you just look over at them, raise an eyebrow, give them a wink, and then look back down?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I bet that really works because you look cool because you're using a mixing glass, which is what I tried to say on Tuesday. Mixing glasses make you look cool and they make you feel cool.
And I know that you use like a pint glass or whatever to do that, and that works fine. But yeah. Pint glass is conical shaped, and so it's smaller at the bottom, and so you get this little tiny stir. And whereas the mixing glass is cylindrical all the way down, and you get this nice wide stir where you're pushing the ice around, it's simpler and it's classier. I just like it way better, and I can really get that movement going much better in a mixing glass.
Yeah, I mean, you outed me, Matthew. I admit it. I used to just use a pint glass as my mixing glass. I did not have a dedicated mixing glass, but I have converted recently. And that is because of this show, right? I was doing all of this research and I wanted to make this episode about the equipment. And I was like, look, if you're going to talk about this piece of equipment, you got to get one and you got to research it and use it. And you're absolutely right. And what I also love about it is that it's a great multitasker. I now have this extra vessel just there available. So if I'm going to be making a shaken cocktail, I now have this other vessel that I can use to like hold liquids or like maybe hold an egg white or whatever.
Or extra ice. Yeah.
Yeah. Or extra ice or all kinds of things. And it just gives me more versatility. And yes, you're absolutely right, though, about the tapered end. I think I did mention that on Tuesday that, yes, there is a tipping problem and it is harder to stir. All right. But as I said, and I know I mentioned this on Tuesday, and I will mention it again, we are going to be talking about all of the proper ways to use this equipment. And by proper, I just mean to get the right effect. There's no right way or wrong way to do these things, at least for amateurs. There might be right or wrong ways to do these things for bartenders for the purposes of, well, repetitive motion injuries, for one, and then because of flair. Right? If you're working at a certain bar, you got to have a carry a certain mystique like Matthew has when he's mixing cocktails for his special some people. So there's no wrong way to do things. It's really about getting the results. And we're going to be giving you tips and tricks on how to get those results using all of this equipment starting the week after next. So stay tuned for that. And hey, if you're listening to this in the future, first of all, are the San Francisco Giants good? No, don't answer that question. I don't think I want to know. But also, then you can listen to those episodes right now because they should be right there in your feed. Okay. With that said, Matthew, it is cocktail time. I am presenting a recipe that I have named Ben's Whiskey Sour.
You just said that it wasn't original, though. And now you're naming it after yourself?
Because I can do that because I'm the bartender.
Okay. No one's fact-checking.
That's right. Nobody's like, yeah, like, why is this called Ben's Whiskey Sour? Because maybe it's Ben's favorite. Or maybe everybody had to present one and this was the one that Ben presented. Or whatever. It doesn't have to necessarily mean that I was the first person to ever put these ingredients together. But nonetheless, there are many whiskey sours, but this is my whiskey sour. Ben's Whiskey Sour. On the Tuesday show, I talked about a very standard, straightforward recipe using bourbon. This cocktail is very similar, but it's also very different because I'm including almost all of the embellishments. So what is in Ben's Whiskey Sour? Well, it has 2 ounces of high-proof rye whiskey. My favorite rye whiskey mixing rye whiskey is Rittenhouse Rye, which is a bottled and bond rye whiskey, which means that it is 100 proof. It is 50% ABV, and therefore it has a bit of a kick to it. And because it's a rye, it has a little bit of the more peppery, spicier flavor profile of a rye whiskey. Then you take 1 ounce of simple syrup. This is standard white cane sugar simple syrup. And then 1 ounce of lemon juice. So just like the one on Tuesday, this follows the 2-1-1 template. But then you are going to add 2 dashes of Angostura bitters, 1 small egg white, which is going to be roughly 1/2 ounce. If you get those like AA, you know, super large California eggs, then you probably want to go with 1/2 ounce. But hey, use the whole thing. It's just going to make your cocktail more frothy, which might not be a bad thing. And then you're going to need a red wine to do a red wine float. Like I said, folks, we're bringing out all the tricks. Now, this red wine can be anything, really, any red wine that you like. And because you're mixing it in as a spirit, it doesn't have to be super amazing. I'm using a Malbec, which has a very sort of fruity profile. Okay, so how do you make it? Well, you combine the whiskey, the simple syrup, the lemon juice, the bitters, and the egg white in a shaker with no ice. Now, again, we're going to talk more about techniques in a couple of weeks, but I am going to give you a little bit of a primer here. You're going to do what's called a dry shake, and we're doing a dry shake because we want to get that egg white to emulsify more than we would get out of a standard and regular shake. So we're going to shake this one twice, once without ice, and that first shake is called a dry shake. It's called a dry shake because we don't have any ice in it. Here's the thing. If you're doing a dry shake with a Boston shaker, the seal is not going to be as tight. I won't go into why, but it has to do with science. Again, this will be explained in my little Boston shaker primer episode that's coming. So you might want to wrap a towel around that while you do the dry shake, because you might have a little bit of leakage around the Boston shaker. Don't let that make you think the Boston shaker isn't great, because it is. Then once you've done the dry shake, open that back up. Then you add your normal amount of ice, which is about 2/3 to 3/4 full on the mixing tin, the larger tin. And then you do a normal shake. So you shake that until it's chilled. Then you are going to strain that into a prepared rocks glass. So even though this is a sour that's shaken, we're going to pour this into a rocks glass with ice, because that's how you do a whiskey sour. And then you are going to top that off with a red wine float. So you're going to take your red wine, and maybe you want to measure off like 1/4 of an ounce of the red wine before, rather than pour it straight from the bottle. Then you're going to take your bar spoon, which we're going to talk about on Tuesday, or any spoon really, and you're going to pour that into the bowl of the spoon and then let that overflow and then just go against the edge or side of the glass. And what I would do is then sprinkle a little bit all over the top of that cocktail, because it's going to be super frothy and have a big foamy head on it. And then the red wine is going to sink down through all of that foam, creating this really cool mottled look or effect as it falls through the creamy egg white foam. And it creates a very cool looking cocktail.
A tie-dye looking cocktail.
And then, oh, I didn't talk about the garnish. You should have prepared ahead of time a garnish on a cocktail pick of 3 brandied cherries, or any cherries of your choice. It should be 3, though, because you're the bartender and this is your house.
And what does my whiskey sour taste like?
You feel the mouthfeel of the foam at the same time that you're tasting the red wine float, and then the cocktail punches through that foam. It is got the spice of the rye whiskey. Of course, the lemon juice and the simple syrup are there. And then you just have the extra little sophistication of the Angostura bitters. And so that's what I'm drinking today, Ben's Whiskey Sour. And it is a very fancy and decadent way to enjoy the whiskey sour.
Well, it's a beautiful drink. And there's an actual sour called the New York Sour that has a wine float on top of it that you're borrowing from. I think it's an amalgam of a couple of different whiskey sour recipes. But I like this. I like kind of blending everything together, which is one of the great things you can do in a home bar. You probably couldn't get this at a restaurant or a bar. I mean, you'd really have to explain what you want. I like this, and it is beautiful. And I will say that, harkening back to last week's happy hour, you used the 2-1-1 ratio, Ben.
I did.
And yeah, which is, you know, the classic ratio. You can't go wrong with that, especially when you're adding egg white and wine floats and all that. I bet it's wonderful.
I especially think that this is just a great ratio for the whiskey sour, especially when you're adding all these other things. The high proof rye, first of all, the fact that it's a higher proof, it can stand up to the extra simple syrup and lemon juice. The other thing is that because you're serving this on the rocks, there's going to be extra dilution. And so again, it's like having a higher proof cocktail, having more of the simple syrup, more of the lemon juice, just gives it that extra ability to stand up to that extra dilution, which you are definitely going to get. And then again, with the egg whites and the wine and the bitters, there's so much flavor in here. that the base of the cocktail having that standard traditional 2-1-1, which some people might think is too much simple syrup and too much lemon juice. Although I would say if it's a sour, it should be sour.
Well, it's a grape cocktail. I really like it. And keep calling it Ben's Whiskey Sour. Who cares what anybody will say?
I will. All right, Matthew, what are you presenting this week?
Well, you presented a shaken cocktail. And since we're talking about equipment, I felt like it was appropriate that I would introduce one of my mixed cocktails using a mixing glass. So I'm presenting a cocktail that I created for our other show, the Giant Cocktails Podcast, and it's called Holy Schmidt, named after one of the Giants players named Casey Schmidt. And what's in a Holy Schmidt? Well, it's got 2 ounces of bourbon, a half ounce of Benedictine, Dom Benedictine, I should say, a half ounce of Amaro Nonino, a quarter ounce of Demerara syrup, 2 dashes of Angostura bitters, 2 dashes of Peychaud's bitters, and then you're going to have an orange twist and a brandied cherry for garnish. So you're going to take all the liquid ingredients, you're going to put them all into a mixing glass, and you're going to add ice, and you're going to put a lot of ice in a mixing glass. You're going to fill that mixing glass at least 2/3 of the way with ice. And you're going to just stir it for a good 30 seconds to add some dilution, because this is a boozy cocktail, folks, and you're going to want some dilution in this cocktail. You're going to want some of that water to balance out all the booze. And then you're going to strain that into what I am using, a Nick and Nora glass. So a chilled Nick and Nora glass, and it fills all the way to the top. And then I take the orange twist and I express the orange oils over the top. And I am only using 1 brandied cherry and I'm placing it at the bottom of the glass. It's kind of the dessert at the end of the glass. At the end of your drink, you'll have this cherry waiting for you. And what you get is a boozy cocktail. The Benedictine is an 80 proof liqueur, so you are definitely getting a punch there. Amaro Nonino, I think, is a 70 proof liqueur. Bourbon, I'm using a 94 proof. I think I'm using Elijah Craig in this one. So it is a boozy cocktail. And so you need the sweetness of the Benedictine and the Amaro Nonino and the Demerara syrup all combined to kind of counteract the high proof bourbon. And so it really does offer a balanced and maybe even skews a little sweet on this cocktail. This is a good digestif, something to have after dinner. It just provides a nice sweetness, but also you get some of the spiciness from the bourbon, and the Peychaud's and the Angostura bitters give it a nice depth to it. So really great cocktail to enjoy after dinner. One of our listeners of our Giant Cocktails podcast suggested that they smoke it. So they add some smoke, which Ben did last week in our happy hour podcast. I have not tried that yet, but I think that would also add a level of sophistication if you wanted to add a little bit of maybe cherry wood smoke on top. Would probably go really well with this cocktail. So that's what I'm drinking, Ben, today, the Holy Schmidt.
Holy Schmidt, indeed. Okay, so first of all, the bourbon, Elijah Craig Small Batch, correct?
Yes, correct.
Yes, nice. See, folks, I told you.
It is my go-to bourbon for mixing. It's higher proof than you'll see. So it's a 94 proof. So it's got a little punch to it, but it's very mellow in its flavors. And it's a good sipping bourbon, especially for someone who's kind of new to whiskey tasting. It's a really nice, easy on the palate bourbon. And I really like it. So it's one of my go-tos.
Right. And really one of the more affordable ones, at least in our part of the world.
Yes. Reasonably priced as well.
Yeah. And so not going to break the bank. I think a great place to start. And a wonderful cocktail bourbon for sure. And then, yes, you mentioned that the Benedictine and the Amaro Nonino are both higher proof liqueurs. Most liqueurs are not. Most liqueurs hover around the 20 to 25% ABV, and many of them are lower than that, in the high teens. And then Dom Benedictine is 40%, which is the same level as many baseline spirits. It's a really interesting liqueur, Dom Benedictine, because it is high proof, very botanical, but also very sweet, which is an unusual combination.
I think it's a great liqueur to use to if you're trying to change up something or add some sweetness to a cocktail, but you don't want to use like a syrup. Benedictine is that sweet.
Yeah, I would agree. There's a liqueur out there called Saint Germain, is often referred to as a way to fix a cocktail that is missing.
Bartender's ketchup.
Yeah, that's right. I would say that Benedictine also has some of that quality, right? Yeah, especially if you're looking for significant sweetness or you don't want to dilute the ABV, or maybe you want to kick it up also. The Amaro Nonino, most Amaros are very, very bitter. I know that this one is not quite so much.
Right, it is on the sweeter side of Amaros. I will say, though, Amaro Nonino is not on the affordable side. It is one of the pricier Amaros, but it's also well known in a couple of classic cocktails. So eventually you're going to want this in your bar.
Yeah. And I think this is the first recipe that we've had that uses Demerara syrup or any syrup that is using one of the less refined or more flavorful sugars out there. So nice. And also, the combination of the bitters, like if that's new to you, this is actually very common. You see a lot of recipes that will call especially for these two, Angostura and Pei Shods. I think these are basically the Coke and Pepsi of bitters.
Yeah. If you're just starting out, you need these two as your go-to bitters in your bar.
I think for a long time, they were the only two that you could probably get.
Probably.
Yeah. And then Scrappies, yeah, if you wanted to go down shelf a little bit.
That's right.
Well, and I like the idea of putting the Grape Brandy Cherry at the bottom as like a little treasure to find. That's really fun. And this is just a very playful cocktail. Oh, and you put this in a Nick and Nora glass.
Yes.
And we are going to be talking about glassware on Tuesday.
Ooh, a little precursor. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So you might be asking, what's a Nick and Nora glass? Is that really the name? Yeah, that's really the name. And we're going to talk about those. We're going to talk about all kinds of glassware. The nice thing is about the stemmed glassware is that they're all interchangeable. So like if you don't have a Nick and Nora, you could use a coupe. And if you don't have a coupe, you can use a martini glass.
They all taste the same. It's just presentation.
The Nick and Nora dough is one of my favorite profiles. So it just, yeah, you look classy when you're drinking it.
When I do a stirred cocktail in a mixing glass, I definitely always tend to skew towards the Nick and Nora. It just feels like that's where it should go.
So for me, it's almost more about the mood or the occasion than it is about the recipe instead. And so I think I often opt for the coupe because I feel like that's just more representative of the moment. And I just hadn't really realized that thought until just now. Interesting.
But I think it speaks to the fact that these glassware is interchangeable and you could just do whatever feels good to you at the time.
And on Tuesday, folks, I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to get and what you absolutely don't have to get. So be sure to join us on Tuesday when we talk about that. All right. Well, there you have it. The Ben's Whiskey Sour and the Holy Schmidt. If you liked either of these recipes enough to try them at home, you can find the recipes in the show notes for today's show. And that brings us to the end of today's show. I will be back on Tuesday for our educational episode, where I will be talking about all of the remaining essential bar equipment that you need when you're getting started in the hobby, with a big segment especially about glassware. And next Friday, Matthew and I will be back for the Happy Hour episode, where we will be talking about glassware and other essential bar equipment. And we will also be presenting two original recipes that are variations of next week's Cocktail of the Week. So be sure to listen to Tuesday's episode to find out what the Cocktail of the Week is, and then come back next Friday to see the twists that Matthew and I put on that particular cocktail. In the meantime, it would be a tremendous help if you could take the time to rate and review the show on your podcast platform of choice, like Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Your feedback is extremely valuable, and your positive ratings really help the show grow. It would also be helpful if you could tell your friends about us. Word of mouth is always the best way to help any podcast grow. If you want to get a hold of us here at The Perfect Sip, you can find us on social media at Instagram and Threads, where we go by the username Perfect Sip Podcast. And you can also find links to all of our social media accounts in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, best of luck in your search for the perfect sip. Cheers, Matthew.
Cheers, Ben. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.